Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to your 1-0 edition of the Locked On Pistons podcast. This is your host, Matt Shook, as the Detroit Pistons have just knocked off the Charlotte Hornets 102-90 in Game 1 of the Little Caesars Arena era in downtown Detroit. We're going to talk about some things I like the most from the game, some things that I did not like from the game, and also some internet fodder that we're going to take down as far as Deadspin.com, again, doing another snarky look at the Detroit Arena, trying to make it look like it's something other than all the other things that are going on with NBA owners and sports owners and the way the public is financing buildings and whatnot that the billionaires should be paying for themselves. And I get it, and I understand it, and I agree with some of it. But there's some things about this that I'm going to kind of take issue with later on in the podcast. But first, the game. I hope you all enjoyed it if you were able to watch it. The first thing I liked the most from Wednesday night's game in downtown Detroit was just having George Blaha and Special K Greg Kelser back in our lives. The preseason games were covered on Pistons.com and ran Mark Champion, who does a great job on the radio for the Pistons. But having Blaha, like he's been throughout a lot of our childhoods, a lot of our adulthoods as well, and Special K, a reliable voice and former Piston himself before my time as a Pistons fan, but a Michigan State guy as well, Detroit guy. So great to have George Blaha, Special K back from Fox Sports Detroit. Just a nice winter sound to have those voices back. Reminds you of some of the good times from back in the olden days of Piston glory as well. Another thing I liked was Tobias Harris going off and going crazy, especially early on in the game. I think he had 17 points in the first quarter for the Pistons and was a reliable option throughout most of the game offensively for the team. He was the leading scorer and the best player on the team last year, and I think we kind of forgot that a little bit in the preseason on this podcast. He had 27 points in 34 minutes tonight to go along with 10 rebounds. I picked him up late in a fantasy draft with my brother this weekend, so I didn't completely forget about you, Tobias, but a nice game from him. We talked about Avery Bradley a lot. We talked about how important Reggie Jackson recovering would be so vital for the Pistons in the early part of the season. And, of course, their best player, Andre Drummond, how important he is every game to them. But we kind of lost Tobias Harris in the shuffle. But, hey, maybe he has even more. Maybe he builds on what he did last season a little bit. Maybe adding Avery Bradley defensively takes a little bit of the pressure off of Tobias Harris. Not that Tobias Harris was the defensive stopper last year, but you know, when guys are playing their roles, when guys are doing the things that they need to do and the things that they do well, that frees up guys to do the things that they do well. So Tobias Harris can kind of take over offensively a little bit, not be worried about covering the other team's good wing players or anything like that. So I like the way that the unit meshed in that way when you had some of those starters and rotation guys in there together, and that worked out really well for Tobias Harris. I think you'll see times like that when he's hot and he kind of runs the offense a little bit. You'll see the same for Bradley. You'll see the same for Jackson throughout the season as it goes along. Some other guys that played well, Langston Galloway was great off the bench. Henry Ellenson was good offensively in the time that he got. Showed some good signs that maybe in his second year he'll be a big-time contributor to the Pistons. And Avery Bradley, in his debut, made the first basket in Little Caesars Arena regular season history, although it was a goaltend, so credit to Dwight Howard on some of that. But I think the player the Pistons should be most excited about in this first game, and we're repeating a little bit what we talked about in the preseason, but it's Reggie Jackson. The point guard didn't play much in the preseason, didn't really train much in the offseason as they wanted to keep the pressure off of the knee after he had the tendonitis problems last year and the surgery right before the season started. He missed a lot of the beginning of the season last year, and when he came back, he wasn't quite as effective, not showing a lot of the push off that knee that you would hope for, especially in a guy that relies so much on his athleticism. He had 13 points in 27 minutes and really just looked good throughout the game when he played, and it was nice to see him getting under 30 minutes of action as well. Stan Van Gundy was afforded that luxury of Reggie Jackson not being able to play that, not being asked to play that much, because Ish Smith played well off the bench. Despite not scoring a ton, Ish Smith did a really good job of keeping the ball moving in transition and keeping the Charlotte Hornets off on their toes a little bit. So a deep performance from a lot of good Piston players tonight in game one. Of course, there's a long way to go. And of course, there were some things that I did not like. But despite the 12-point win and some feel-good things about Wednesday's opener in Little Caesars Arena, there were some things I didn't like, and we're going to start with Stanley Johnson. And I know that there were a lot of people talking about how good he was defensively, and he did play 40 minutes, so it's a good sign that Stan Van Gundy certainly agreed. I saw Duncan Smith, who's the former host of Locked On Pistons and whose opinion about the Pistons I certainly respect and agree with a lot of times, and certainly Stanley Johnson was good defensively tonight, don't get me wrong. But 0 for 12 from the field, 2 points. And we're not going to harp on a one bad shooting night and say that he's a lost cause. We're just talking about one game and how, you know, things are looking going forward. But Stanley Johnson is just not a good offensive player. And it's something to think about as this team moves forward. You already have Avery Bradley out there, who's your top defensive player. Stanley Johnson was good defensively tonight, but he wasn't Tony Allen in his prime. He wasn't Kawhi Leonard out there, and he wasn't Avery Bradley out there. I watched Avery Bradley very close defensively. You can see a lot of the on-the-ball defense that was talked about when he came to Detroit. He was billed as this player, and he's proven to be that so far. And I know we're very early into the season, but Stanley Johnson is just not good as far as finishing plays and scoring the basketball. His misses were way off. Even when he got his first look in the game was an easy leaner in the lane that he missed coming up short. And I know that his last shot of the game, I believe, was that three-pointer in the corner that rimmed out. So the narrative might be that he had a lot of shots that could have gone down. But, man, if you go back and watch that game, which I did, there were some jumpers that were missed badly. Stanley Johnson did not, and obviously when you're not scoring points, you're not looking good offensively, but he wasn't doing a lot of other things offensively. He wasn't creating other shots for other people. If Stanley Johnson's going to be the player that we hoped that he would be when he was drafted so high a few years ago in the first round, he's going to have to step up and be at least a passable offensive player. Because guess what? Reggie Bullock's going to be coming back from his drug suspension in a few games, and it's going to be some minutes cut there. Tobias Harris, if he plays well enough, he's going to demand minutes at both the power forward and the small forward spot. There's going to be games that Boban's in there that's going to shift John Luehr to exclusively a four. So you're going to have It's not going to be 40 minutes a night for Stanley Johnson. He might be needed for heavy minutes, especially early on in the season without Reggie Bullock. But if you mix Kennard in there, if you mix Tolliver there at times, if you get Galloway in some different positions on the wings, Stanley Johnson's going to have to step up. And I know it's a win. Everyone feels good. And Stan, like I said, gave him 40 minutes of action out there. But we're going to need to see some more from Stanley Johnson. That jump shot that we've heard about, how he's worked on so much after practices and whatnot, it just did not look good at all. So, again, 1-0, no reason to panic, obviously, but we'll see what happens with Stanley going forward. Some other things that I didn't like, and I'm not necessarily criticizing Stan, but some surprises, I guess, some DNPs from Boban tonight, and Luke Kennard as well, and what would have been his NBA debut. And then you had Anthony Tolliver in a suit as an inactive player. And there's going to be an odd man out every night, so I'm not saying that there's, again, anything wrong with those decisions, but for what, as much as the internet and some Pistons fans love Boban out there, to have Eric Moreland playing against Dwight Howard and against some of the other centers that you're going to see throughout the season, the Pistons might have to step back and take the inventory of their backup center position and think about really what they're doing going forward. Will Boban get minutes against certain teams, or is Eric Moreland going to be enough to get 12 minutes a night against some of these teams? I don't know. Obviously, Eric Moreland is a better defensive player. Obviously, Boban's a better offensive player, but I don't know if this is something that you can maintain throughout the season. John Luehr did get some minutes as the backup center, especially early in the fourth quarter with Henry Ellenson out at power forward with him. I thought it was wrong of Steve Clifford and the Hornets to not try to take advantage of Cody Zeller inside against John Luehr some more during those times. You didn't really see any post-ups at all. He's one of those traditional players, and Some people, I've even heard people talk about how maybe Zeller regains the starting job from Dwight Howard at some point if the Dwight Howard experiment doesn't go well. But either, any way you look at it, the backup center position might be something to keep an eye on, and it might be concerning going forward. If Boban couldn't play at all against tonight, you know, is he going to be more comfortable in other situations? We'll see. You know, when he's in there, he gets the ball, and the Pistons do a good job of exploiting the size advantage. But is he too bad defensively to play, despite what we've heard this offseason, despite what we've the amount of money he's being paid in that four-year deal that he got before last season? So another thing to think about. And as far as something that I'm kind of blaming myself a little bit for talking about these two, as Henry Ellenson and Luke Kennard, I kind of talked about them as a package deal of sorts in the preseason, given that they were guys that didn't play at all. Obviously, in Kennard's case, he didn't play because he was at Duke last year, but didn't play at the big club in the rotation. And I thought that, you know, Ellenson was maybe competing with Anthony Tolliver, and Luke Kennard was maybe competing with Langston Galloway, among others, for minutes in the backcourt and front court there. But I just think it's maybe pretty different situations. Ellenson might have done a lot this offseason and this training camp to earn his spot in the rotation, whereas Luke Kennard still might have a way to go. And that might be the difference between a second-year guy and a rookie guy. Stan Van Gundy might be trying to prove more of a point or trying to get more out of Luke Kennard defensively before he's ready to slide him into these regular season games, whereas Ellenson did the Grand Rapids trips last year, did a little bit of NBA conditioning. And from all we hear about Ellenson, is he's a guy who's very focused on his game and is someone who is looking to improve throughout the season all last year. So maybe it's a little bit of a gut check for Luke Kennard. I know it's early on in his career, obviously, and early on in the season too, but something to think about as well as is maybe that the way that I characterize those two as kind of in similar plights was a little bit misguided, as they're different guys and they're facing different challenges as well. Another thing that kind of stuck out to me is how bad the Charlotte Hornets were, huh? I mean, Dwight Howard's coming in there for his first game. And Malik Monk's a rookie that they're hoping to make an impact throughout the season. But like I predicted in my bold predictions podcast the other day, I really don't like this team really at all, actually. I don't think Dwight Howard comes in at this point in his career and helps you enough to mitigate the fact that he's been a problem behind the scenes throughout his entire career. I don't like guys like Dwayne Bacon. I don't like guys like Jeremy Lamb. I don't like Marvin Williams. Remember when he was the second pick of the draft in the Chris Paul, Darren Williams draft? I mean, it feels like we've been waiting not only his 12-year NBA career, but like 15 years for Marvin Williams to turn into a player that's been, you know, worth what the hype's been about him. There were guys in that rotation today with the Hornets that I'd barely heard of, and it's going to be a lot on Kemba Walker to try to drag that team through the 8 to 10 weeks period or whatever it is that Nick Batum's going to be out. And Nick Batum's is a good player, but he's not the kind of player who's going to take a bad team and turn him into a good one. And you don't have to be that good to be an Eastern Conference playoff team, but all these people who think that maybe the Hornets are not really even in that bottom 6, 7, or 8 and might be contending more for that 5 spot or trying to get maybe even home court advantage in the first round. I don't see it. I don't see it at all, actually. And of the 9 teams that people think about in the East as far as being playoff contenders, and I put the Pistons in that group for those 9 teams vying for 8 spots, leaving out Orlando and all the tanking teams out of that, I think that Charlotte is really the worst one out of them. And I have them predicted as being outside of the playoffs, especially if they can't weather the storm without Batum. And what kind of toll is it going to take on Kemba Walker throughout this season if he's going to be the focus of his team once again? And I worry, like I talked about with CJ McCollum and Dame Lillard, I worry about guys like Kemba Walker who made kind of a semi-leap one year, and now they've got to kind of deal with the fact that now they've entered into another echelon of NBA star. And are they going to be able to take that next step? And I'm not saying Kemba Walker can't, and it's not completely possible that it will happen for him, but he's got to have more help. I just don't see a lot from that team. Obviously, it's one game, but again, my prediction stands. We'll take a look at it throughout the year, but I just really don't like this Charlotte.
Detroit basketball!
And that's another reason to kind of keep cool about the Pistons, despite an impressive-looking win on opening night at Little Caesars Arena, is that Charlotte is really maybe not that good. But if I want to switch gears here for a second, I know this is a Detroit Pistons podcast, and really this has nothing to do with it, but rest in peace to Gord Downie, the front man for many years for Tragically Hip, who had the brain cancer and died after the long tour last year throughout Canada. I mean, this guy and that band meant a lot to Canadians everywhere, just like other heroes like Wayne Gretzky and Tim Horton, if that's a real guy. I'm not really sure about that, but Gord Downie and the Tragically Hip, if you're looking for some music to listen to, give them a chance. It's a great band. Just go with the start, the greatest hits. Start from there. Gord Downie, rest in peace. You will be missed. The Canadian poet laureate in a lot of ways.
Yes, sir!
And a stirring tribute there from Rip, no doubt. And one thing I wanted to add about the rotation and talking about Boban and not playing and Kennard not playing and Tolliver getting the on the inactive list. It's going to be, I think that the Pistons might be, I don't think they're stuck in this rotation that they have right now. Like I said, Reggie Bullock's going to be coming back in a few games anyway, so that'll shake things up somehow or some way. I don't think the Pistons are stuck on this rotation in any by any means. I think in some ways, like we talked about, training camp continues a little bit. The dress rehearsal for minutes continues a little bit. It's going to be worth watching the rotations as time goes on, especially when a situation like this weekend comes up, when you're Friday night at Washington, you're Saturday night at the New York Knicks. Now, if you're coaching the LA Clippers last season, who have Chris Paul, DeAndre Jordan, and Blake Griffin, you know, three veterans who carry your team, you're Doc Rivers in that situation. You got back-to-back on the road. You might, you know, sit the stars for one game, play the stars for the other game, usually sitting them on the back, the second of the back-to-back. You know, if you got a guy like LeBron James, you think about those kind of things with the back-to-back situations. Stan Van Gundy doesn't have that problem, and maybe they juggle the inactive list and some of the DNPs according to matchups, and you can kind of say, okay, this is the unit we're throwing out there for Washington, this is the unit we're throwing out there for New York, especially given that Washington's probably a loss and that New York's probably a win. So that's one of the main things I'm going to be looking at this weekend is, first of all, how do you try to stop a John Wall? Because to beat Washington, to beat those teams like that, guys like Reggie Jackson, Avery Bradley, and Stanley Johnson, there's going to have to be some way to pick on the John Walls, the Kyrie Irvings, the Steph Currys, all these great point guards out throughout the NBA, and the new rookies coming in. And Kemba Walker was one of those guys, and they did pretty well against him, although, like I said, not a lot of help for Kemba when talking about the Charlotte roster. How are you going to contain guys like John Wall? But then again, also importantly, like I'm saying, the rotation, who's playing, who complements each other, is there a big drastic change from one night of a back-to-back to the other night of a back-to-back? Is Reggie Jackson's minutes? I mean, I think Stan Van Gundy has some possibilities here. Which game is Boban going to possibly be a factor in? Which game do you need more of Eric Moreland? Those kind of questions. Does Luke Kennard get a look in one of these things? So I think the Pistons are in a unique and favorable position in that way. They got more depth than a lot of teams in the NBA, and that might be something that throughout the course of an 82-game slog that it turns into throughout sometimes, and those back-to-backs or those three games in 5 days or whatever the tough situation you might be in travel-wise or anything like that, the Pistons might be at a little bit of an advantage in some of these situations compared to other teams. Now, moving on, I wanted to talk about a Deadspin story that came out tonight, Wednesday night during the game. It featured a lot of they call it empty arena porn, where it's, you know, a lot of the empty seats, and you see this from a lot of baseball games throughout the season. Trust me, I went to a lot of White Sox games this summer. I've seen a lot of empty seats, and we saw those in baseball stadiums throughout the land. And of course, the newest one, the newest fad of these empty seat porn is any football game in LA, with the Chargers and the Rams not drawing in LA like maybe those owners had hoped. But they did that kind of thing, pulling up some tweets from some people that were at the game at Little Caesars Arena. And just the ones that were used in that story, first of all, they were from during warm-ups, from the tip-off, and from the start of the second half. Now, I don't know if you've been to a lot of NBA games as far as the listeners of this podcast, but I don't think I've ever been to an arena where there's people in those seats at that time. I don't think, of all the sporting events I've been to, I don't know that I've ever been in my seat to start the second half of a game. So I think you take those pictures with a grain of salt. Another thing that the article focused on was that Quicken was giving away 50 free tickets and, you know, I think 25 sets of two or something like that to employees as an indication of how pathetic it was that 2 hours before game time that a downtown Detroit company was giving away tickets to some of their young professionals that are downtown these days. I mean, look, I know it wasn't a sellout, and I know that it wasn't probably a great turnout. And Tony Paul was tweeting about it a lot tonight, a respected friend of mine and Detroit News reporter. So I'm not sitting here apologizing and saying that, oh, fans were there, you don't know what you're talking about. I did watch the game, and they did show the, you know, they did show fans and showed camera angles several times, and it looked like it was a decent turnout, all things considered. You know, and maybe I'm kind of going back on what I said yesterday as far as hoping that maybe this would be a sellout, that maybe there would be more people there. But, you know, and I'm being probably a little provincial here when you got a national website like Deadspin kind of going at the Detroit Pistons and going at Little Caesars Arena. But again, it's, and another thing to consider when taking, you know, the temperature of this situation is, I don't know if you were at the Palace for the last 7-8 years, or maybe even closer to a decade, but there was nobody in Auburn Hills to watch those games. So again, it's the fickle nature of fans, and I'm not blaming fans because I've never really understood the concept of front-running fans and why that's such a negative thing. If a team is playing well, you should go to the game, you should buy tickets, you should buy merchandise, you should support those teams. If an organization is performing badly, what do you have like a contract? You have to show up to a few games a year? I don't think that's necessarily a true thing either. If there's an intriguing thing you want to check out, if you like watching NBA basketball, if you're there to watch the visitors, I understand that completely, but you're not morally obligated as a basketball fan in the Detroit area to go to those games. So I'm not blaming fans at all, but I'm just saying it has nothing to do with apathy about Little Caesars Arena. It's just that the Pistons aren't a great draw right now. They're kind of a boring team, and they've had a lot of lean years. It's going to be up to Stan Van Gundy and those guys to turn that around themselves. Another thing that the article talked about is it referenced, I think it was even in the headline, it referenced how the Pistons' dumb arena. And it takes out the latest, and of course, that's based a lot about the public financing debate. And I understand that the Little Caesars Arena is the newest one of a crop of many, many dozens of arenas that had public financing. And I'm not saying that public financing for arenas built by billionaires is a good thing. I'm against it. I think that any time that ever comes up to a vote to the public, they should turn it down emphatically. But again, taking the latest example of that and going after it, and I know it's in the news right now, so it's kind of the news peg you have to deal with, but it just makes me a little uncomfortable as the guy who's a fan of the team that they happen to be talking about at that time. And when you're talking about Mike Ilitch somehow doing the state of Michigan or the city of Detroit wrong, and the Ilitch family obviously now, are you suggesting that the Ilitches are killing Detroit or something like that? I mean, I know that they sat on a lot of land for a long time to develop that area where the arena is at and where that District Detroit is going to be. But if nothing else, it's kind of a reward for being the one, you know, corporate entity that was sticking around in the 1990s when everyone else was running away from downtown Detroit. It's development. It's business. It's not always pretty. But that's how sometimes that these big projects get done. And I think that 10 years from now, we're going to look back at Little Caesars Arena and District Detroit as being a good thing for the Motor City. And I think we can all get behind that. And they also use digs in this article of saying the arena is named after cheap pizza. Now, I'll tell you what. Goddamn right it's named after cheap pizza. And that's our version of the American dream in Detroit. Mike Ilitch built a life and built an empire on Little Caesars Pizza. And you know what? For $5, it's damn good. I'll stand by that. I think I'm not unlike a lot of people in Metro Detroit or around the country now who grew up on Pizza Pizza, who had hot and readies during college hangovers when you were broke, all that kind of stuff. Or maybe if you were unemployed and you had to feed your family while you were struggling, $5, not that bad. And it's pretty good stuff. I remember when I was in Springfield, Missouri, and Mike Ilitch shelled out a lot of money for Prince Fielder, you better believe I went out and got a hot and ready that night. And I went to Little Caesars and I supported a Detroit company. Now, if you want to make fun of the fact that it's quote unquote cheap pizza that the arena is named after, well, let's go around the NBA. How about that? The Golden One Center in Sacramento. I have no idea what Golden One Center is named after. The Smoothie King Center is in New Orleans. That's where they just had the All-Star Game. It's the Smoothie King Center. That's a joke. That's a cartoon. Okay, how about prideful companies that they're being named after? A bank, Barclays. Banker's Life. Yeah, another one. FedEx. Yeah, that's a company that brings up a lot of good feelings. I mean, these are arenas around the NBA. The Moda Center in Portland, it's named after a health insurance company. Capital One Arena, another bank in Washington, D.C. Well, that makes sense. Pepsi Center in Denver, you know, a sugary drink that causes health problems and diabetes for everyone that drinks it. That's not even located in Denver. It's in New York. Staples Center, an office supply conglomerate in Los Angeles. Toyota Center, a company that makes cars from freaking Japan in Houston. That's what they're named after. Talking Stick Resort Arena in Phoenix. And how about Air Canada Center, the United Center? These are airlines. I mean, in Chicago, I mean, of course, weren't we all pissed off at United a few months ago, and after we forgot about that a couple days later? How about this? Talking about taking pride in your region and a unique local company like Little Caesars Arena. Would you rather be called American Airlines Arena, like Miami, or American Airlines Center, like it is in Dallas? That's right. But, and I don't know if you remember this, but the Heat and Mavericks have played in two recent NBA Finals, and all of those games in those NBA Finals were played in arenas that were named after American Airlines, because both of those NBA teams are named after American Airlines. American Airlines Arena and American Airlines Center. Wow, how unique that you have the same freaking name except for arena and center of two arenas in the NBA. So, I mean, that's just, it's just taking a dig of something you don't like and cheap pizza. And hey, there's nothing wrong with cheap and there's nothing wrong with pizza, especially when it's pretty freaking good if you ask me. So anyway, I'm going to try to calm down here, and I appreciate you guys sticking with me on Locked On Pistons today. We'll be back after checking out the weekend games, and I'm going to the game Monday, so we're going to have a Monday morning, we'll have a weekend report from Washington and New York's games, and then Tuesday, I'm going to tell you all about what I think of Little Caesars Arena, despite it being named after cheap pizza. So thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll talk to you later.
Napa know-how. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa auto parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.